This is How to Kill a Piano, episode 22. I'm George Tate. Thanks for being here. Well, you've made it. We've made it here together this far. Today, chapter 17 of How to Kill a Piano. Normally, this is where I would do a big fanfare introduction and tell you some of the things that have been going on. But you know what? Let's just escape from all that and go straight into chapter 17. It's a short chapter, but an important one. Without further ado, the aftermath. Charlie! Charlie! I screamed out, waking myself up to find myself in my bed at home. I sighed with relief, and my heart was still beating in my chest. My head still felt fuzzy. I reached up and felt the back of my scalp, and I swear I could still feel an indentation, but dreams aren't real. I comforted myself, thinking, thank goodness, it was all a dream. I pulled myself out of bed and dragged my body down the hall, tracing my hand along the wall as I walked because my eyes weren't all the way open yet. I entered the washroom and filled a glass with water. It feels cold as I drink it down. I look over at a small collection of books that Charlie keeps in the lavatory above the toilet, and I see my favorite. It was a small book, no more than 3 inches tall. The binding was purple, and the lettering called out with shimmering embossed gold letters. "Are you psychic?" the spine inquired. The other books that kept it company were also carefully curated and had curious titles like Pooh Gets Stuck, a small children's book about a certain cartoon honey-loving bear and his friend Christopher Robbins. Yet another was called Transformations, a book of toilet paper origami, and the best of the past has yet to come into our future. But it was Are You Psychic that was my favorite out of all of them. We didn't often host guests, but I'd imagine that the curiosity of the guest would get the best of them when they found themselves alone in those quieter moments. The binding of the book with those iconic words, Are You Psychic, would call out to them as it often did to me. Their inner child of curiosity wouldn't be able to resist reaching up, sliding the book off the shelf, and opening the book to disappointment. As the book would open, they'd see the words, obviously not, printed in large, bold letters across the pages of the first half of the book. If the curious reader kept turning the pages and went deeper, the word idiot flooded the second half of the novel, thus playfully slapping the reader across the face. Well, metaphorically. It's the kind of practical joke that most people wouldn't ever admit to falling for. It was this kind of humor that I inherited from Uncle Charlie proudly. I finally looked up into the mirror, and the reflection peering back startled me. I dropped the glass and it shattered as it impacted on the sink. Shards of glass went all over the floor and down the drain. When you're in your teens, your face is youthful, smooth, and nearly wrinkle-free. You begin to lose the baby fat in your face. While the changes your body are going through are subtle, overall, you look less like a child and more like an adult. That was the face I was used to seeing looking back each morning. This new face didn't feel like mine, but it was attached to me. I've aged. I was no longer the young man that I was. I opened my mouth to let out the only two words that I could muster, hoping my sound box was working. Oh, shit! I brought my hands to my face, and I was surprised to watch the reflection in the mirror matching my actions perfectly. This can't be me, I said out loud, nervously, as the mirror image spoke in unison. It's natural for your face to age slowly. So much so that it's difficult to notice that it's even happening. Each change lingers long enough for us to believe that it belongs there. This helps us to adjust to the aging process naturally, rather than being shocked into it. What we do in our 20s will reflect how we look in the future. It affects our 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond. The only way to stay young forever is to make sure you never age. And for most of us, that option is rather permanent and has the side effect of stopping us from breathing. The Athenians seemed to stay young forever. This was a luxury that I would never have afforded to me. And I had been slowly coming to terms with this concept, but I thought I was going to have a lot more time than this. I examined my face in the mirror, attempting to determine my age. I began talking to my reflection, trying to reason with it. How long had I been asleep? My reflection didn't answer me. Did I miss a lot of time, or did that box at Scrutius and Absinthe stuff me and do all of this? The reflection only mimicked and provided no wisdom. Wait a second. Where's Charlie? My last memory before waking up in bed was hearing Charlie's voice apologize, and I stormed into Charlie's room to discover it was empty. The bed sheets were undisturbed. The house plants throughout the house were all dry and decaying. I ran downstairs and weaved my way between the bookcases to the center of the labyrinth to find that stupid piano standing silently, with its fallboard closed, covered in dust. I stormed up the stairs and ran outside to find Charlie's car, but Charlie was nowhere to be found. Maybe he's out for a walk, I said out loud, irrationally comforting myself. I scoured through as much research in Charlie's library as I could find to attempt to figure out what had happened. I discovered more questions than I found answers. I determined that I somehow missed approximately 20 years of my life. Except no time had passed at all. My face looked 40, but my mind was still with Charlie as I watched him from behind the metal Ascrutius and Absinthe's trap. When I studied my face closer in the mirror, I found tiny little expression lines that looked like crow's feet at the edges of my eyes. I told myself that they were charming, and they were when they were on Charlie. I wasn't sure how long it would take for me to get used to my own face. I read that a face in its 30s, while it still maintains a youthful look, it's this decade when you begin to notice that your skin starts to look tired and less radiant. This is when you should be prepared for the dreaded 11s. Those are the pair of lines that pop between your eyebrows. They're usually formed from a constant scrunching of the eyebrows toward the bridge of the nose when your face is trying to make sense of an already horrible and confusing world. I had barely scratched the surface in my own life to know just how awful the world could be. Charlie had been sheltering me from the horrors of this place. I leaned in closer, and I noticed I had hair growing in places it usually didn't. My nostrils, my chin, my cheeks. Wisps of hair was growing out of my ears. My clothing felt tighter. This wasn't a face of 30. It wasn't a face of 20. A face in one's 40 seemed to be a better approximation. The lines around my mouth were starting to deepen. There were wrinkles across my forehead, and I had smile lines, but I don't remember the last time I smiled. 10 years from now, I might expect the fat beneath my skin to start to fade away. My skin will become less translucent. I can already feel how dry my fingers are. And the simple task of turning pages in a book is cumbersome. Suddenly, I remembered the book Invisible Persuasions. Sarah gave me one job: protect the book at all costs. I raced back to my bedroom and reached between the headboard and the wall to find it hanging peacefully, right where I left it. Well, at least they didn't get the book, I admitted aloud with desperation in my breath. I had hoped to wake up from this nightmare, but it was never ending. After 2 days, Charlie still hadn't returned. I grabbed the book out of its hiding place and tucked it into the waistband of my pants beneath my shirt. I grabbed eucalyptus, took Charlie's car keys, and got into Charlie's car. The seatbelt whirred along the track, securing me in place as I started the engine. I clipped eucalyptus into the passenger seat beside me. It was time to get some real, uninterrupted answers. And this time I wasn't going to let Sarah end the lesson until I was ready for it to stop. That concludes chapter 17 and episode 22 of How to Kill a Piano. Thanks for listening. As always, please, if you haven't already, give us a like and a review over on Apple iTunes. You can go to howtokillapiano.com to see exactly how to do that by clicking the review button on the top of the page. For more information and updates, please visit howtokillapiano.com. You can read more about me. You can read more about this project. And of course, find out when the next giveaway is. Or just buy some stuff in the merch store. Whatever you'd like. I'm George Tate. I will see you next week.